This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. We'll get a look at downtown Chicago real estate. What can we expect as the pandemic rolls on? Also, Greg Hines from Crane's Chicago Business will be here to talk about the governor's announcement about high school sports and whether it may extend to other areas. Right now, second quarter GDP and weekly jobless claims lead today's economic headlines. Gus Fauché is joining us, chief economist with PNC Financial Services based in Pittsburgh. Gus, we see this number, 32.9%, worst plunge ever. Can you help us to put this in context?
So that was 33% at an annual rate. If you look at the size of the U.S. economy now, it's about 10.5% smaller than it was at the end of 2019. So over two quarters, we've seen a significant contraction, about a 10% decline in the size of the economy. But I think that annualized number overstates the extent of the drop.
Yeah, and that's the one that we're hearing, because I mean, it just sounds like such a staggering number. It is still bad, though, and are we able to see yet from the data, is it widespread, this contraction?
Yes, and so we saw big drops in consumer spending, in business investment, in investment in housing, in exports and imports, in inventories. The one source of strength was the government spending at the federal level, not surprisingly, was up in the quarter, but even state and local government spending declined. So it was a pretty widespread contraction in economic activity, and certainly the most severe downturn we've seen in the United States since the Great Depression in the 1930s.
And does this just end up, being a spiral effect where as more businesses are struggling, they're laying off workers, those workers are conserving money and not spending it? I mean, does it just create a challenge that just gets worse?
It is creating a challenge. It's getting worse, and we see that in the initial unemployment insurance claims, which have stabilized at around 1.4 million people. So we have a million people a week, it looks like, losing their jobs. That's why I'm also concerned about this, the inability of Congress to extend the unemployment insurance benefits. If those formerly employed workers don't have access to those benefits, they're going to cut back on their spending, and that could make the problem even worse.
And are we seeing, again, I'm not sure if this is in any of the data that you've been looking at, but are we seeing even people who are employed are spending less just out of fear that, you know, who knows when they may lose their jobs?
There is some of that, but on the other hand, you know, there was such a contraction in spending in March and particularly April, people weren't going out. As the economy has reopened, we have seen a bit of a rebound there. So I think we're likely to see economic growth in the third quarter of this year. It's a question of how strong it's going to be, and that's going to depend on the path of the virus. It's going to depend on whether Congress extends those unemployment insurance benefits, and then it's going to depend on how comfortable consumers feel going out and being part of a crowd.
Thanks so much, Gus Fauché. Good insight. He is chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Just ahead, how the pandemic will impact fall sports in Illinois. Governor Pritzker announced a plan for fall sports in the state while warning a wider pandemic pullback could be necessary. We're joined by Greg Hines, a columnist at Crane's Chicago Business. Greg, the governor, kind of a mixed announcement here. It just depends on what sport you play.
Yeah, it's generally not good, though, particularly for those of your listeners who have kids in high school who are in contact sports like football and basketball. Essentially, the governor issued guidelines. The State Athletic Association followed up with some actual rules a little bit later. Essentially, football, volleyball, things like that have been moved to the spring from the fall, so no fall football. basketball games are still not allowed. You can practice. We're going to see if it happens. The only thing that's fully on are completely non-contact sports like golf and cross country, whatever. Above and beyond that, the rules, the guidelines, the governor should apply not only to kids in school, but they also apply to amateur athletic leagues that adults are in. If you're in a softball league or something like that, your ability to play right now is going to be pretty limited.
I'm wondering if you're a student that would normally be a fall and spring athlete, a two-sport athlete, they're going to have to make those decisions come the spring. Which sport do you want to play?
This is not good, and nobody's putting a happy face on it. The governor's pitching this is necessary. He's noted correctly that even if you look at professional sports, which have a lot of money and they've done everything, doctors and sanitary devices on top of sanitary devices. Look what happened with the Florida Marlins, where it's what at one point the 16, 17 people on the team and in the front office have been infected now, and there's a real question now whether the Marlins are going to be able to play baseball at all. If it happens to them, what about schools and things like that, where the ability to protect is much more limited?
Let's talk about the sort of wider issue that the governor said, hey, bars and restaurants, they may get closed down again.
Illinois clamped down pretty hard. A lot of people squawked about it, but it was successful. All the numbers, the positivity and the test rates, the number of people in the hospital, all those numbers by around early June really got driven down pretty good. So the state started to open up. Fortunately for us, we reopened slower than it happened in the American South and West, where a number of states that didn't close down a lot to start with, and they threw away the rules. Well, if you look now, Florida's had record number of deaths, not just infections, deaths, people gone, 6 foot and under, 3 days in a row. Same is happening to a slightly lesser degree in Texas, California, Alabama, places like that. And the governor's saying, hey, I got to keep a real track on our numbers here because we don't want that to happen. And indeed, the infection numbers, the positivity rate, but not fatalities, not hospitalizations, has started to tick up a little bit. They're about, we've gone from, 2.3%, 2.4% in infection rate in terms of number of tests that come back positive to, we're starting to push 4% a day now. If that continues to go up, he says, we're going to have to do something about it, and it could go up quickly. That's the basis for that. And it's that also is a spice of life today, and it's not good news, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing because you have the governor who's trying to keep people alive, and then you have business owners, especially small business owners, who say, we don't know if we'll be able to survive another shutdown.
Yeah, this is this is Hobson's choices on top of Hobson's choices. This is just agonizing stuff. I mean, you're right. People have to have jobs. If they don't have jobs because the business is closed down, how are they going to feed their family? How are they going to send the kids to school? How are they going to pay the mortgage? Look at what's now going on in the public school sector, which is also real close to a number of us. There's lots of research that shows that kids, particularly young kids, need hand-on instruction in the school. But the teachers are scared to death. The staff is scared to death. We really don't know yet to what degree younger kids, although they won't get seriously sick themselves, can pass it on to mom and dad or to grandparents who will. Whatever we do there, it's going to be wrong. It's just a question of which choice is least wrong.
Thanks so much, Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. You can read him in print or online. Just ahead, Illinois' largest water park is open. How is it navigating the COVID crisis?
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Recreational facilities are working hard to safely welcome visitors during the coronavirus outbreak. Let's check on one of the largest ones in Illinois. Brad Donati, spokesman for Raging Waves. Waves in Yorkville. That is the largest water park in Illinois. Brad, it's good to have you here. So what has this been like? I'm guessing a lot of hard work in order to figure out the plan to be open and stay open.
Oh, yeah. It's been a lot of work, going back last month, working side and side with the state to figure out a safe plan to reopen. That was the main thing for us, is just making sure it was a safe and family fun experience for everyone.
So what are some of the things that you did in order to make it safe and yet fun?
Yeah, so working with the state, you know, we really have limited capacity right now, so it's not like a typical season that you would expect with the crowds. Every person who comes into the park will have a health screening, so that's for our guests and team members. And then other things throughout the park, you mean increased sanitation, cleaning, what you are required to wear a face mask when you come into the park, so things like that.
Yeah, but not obviously while you're in the water.
Nope. So when you're in the water, you don't have to wear a face mask. But, you know, we ask when people come in or in their common areas that they are wearing face masks.
So what kind of feedback are you getting from the people who come into the water park when they see the restrictions, the precautions? I mean, how are they feeling about it?
Yeah, you know, people are feeling good. You know, when they come to the park, everyone who has to reserve a spot online, that goes for general admission and our season pass holders. So when they go online, they kind of have all the information in front of them to, you know, make sure they're comfortable with visiting. And, you know, we've had good and positive feedback for everyone that comes on site, you mean, in regards to social distancing and making sure that they're feeling safe.
Yeah, so you're getting that when people are in the water, they're not congregating, they're okay saying, hey, if we want to keep this thing open, we need to stay away from each other.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, we have certain attractions that are closed, you know, like our Lazy River's not open right now. But, you know, I mean, all the slides, you know, there's social distancing on the towers while you're waiting. And obviously you're going down with just your family or small groups of, you know, 1 to 4 people on certain attractions.
Is there any sort of eating or drinking and anything like that available for people?
Yeah, so we have multiple food kiosks throughout the park, and we've actually implemented mobile ordering this season for some of our venues. Again, just to kind of cut back on the lines, and we'll deliver the food right to your table.
Now, when you first started this, working with the state, I mean, did you think there was any way that you were going to get to the point of having a water park open during this?
Yeah, so, you know, going back, obviously, you know, I mean, it was a long journey for us, I mean, working with the state to see if we were going to get to this point. But, you know, we were happy to work with them to be included in the Phase 4 reopening of Illinois plan. You know, obviously with us, you know, the chlorinated water kills the virus, but obviously there are a lot of shared surfaces, and, you know, we work with them to make sure that we could provide that sanitation and the cleanliness that our standards are to make sure that everyone stays safe.
So what do you say to potential customers, whether it's your water park or some other place like that, where they might be hesitant to come in? They might fear for their safety. Is there any sort of encouragement or advice?
Yeah, you know, again, I know a lot of the facilities and recreational entertainment in the area, you know, are working with limited capacities. And, you mean, the main thing for us is that health screening and temperature checks as guests come in. You know, I think that's a reassuring effort to, you know, I mean, make sure everyone's staying safe here. And, you know, we are on 58 acres. So as far as social distancing and keeping distance, even when just laying out on the lounge chairs, you know, we have a lot of space to be out and spread out outside.
Brad Donati, he is with Raging Waves. That's the largest water park in the state. It is in far west suburban Yorkville. Still ahead, Technology Thursday, big tech on the congressional hot seat.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. 3 Chicago police officers are wounded as they transport a prisoner. President Trump suggests the fall election should be delayed over concerns about mail-in vote fraud. Technology Thursday analyzing the virtual appearance of Silicon Valley CEOs on Capitol Hill this week. And there's a change of ownership for a new skyscraper being built in Chicago. On the markets, the Dow down 245, NASDAQ is up 42, and the S&P is down 14 points. Oil is down right about 3%. Some lingering rain showers south of the city as we head to a high of 81 degrees. That's where we are at O'Hare at the lakefront, though, right now, just 76 degrees. A man suspected of a carjacking that started shooting at a Chicago police officer as several of them were attempting to complete an arrest outside the 25th District Station on the northwest side this morning. Police Superintendent David Brown.
During the arrest process, the offender was able to fire multiple shots at arresting officers. Officer number one has a gunshot wound to the chin. He was shot in his vest. He's currently being treated here. Officer number two has a gunshot wound to his vest. It did not penetrate, and he's being treated at Loyola Hospital.
It's unclear how the prisoner was able to get a hold of the gun. President Trump is asking on Twitter this morning whether the November election should be delayed until, as he puts it, people can properly, securely, and safely vote. He says universal mail-in voting would lead to the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. Congress will have the final say about any decision to change election day from November 3rd. Whether you're working remotely or you're traveling this summer, if you have a smart speaker, Alexa, or Google Home, remember all you have to do is tell it to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are mixed today. Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities based in New York. Art, it seems like a bit of a turnaround here on Wall Street compared to what we were seeing this morning.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the drivers for the turnaround is some of those technology companies we've been talking about so much. They were on Capitol Hill yesterday, and most of them report tonight after the close, are actually catching a little bit of a bid here. So the NASDAQ, which is pretty tech heavy, is actually outperforming the S&P and the Dow. But all three of the major indices are doing a bit better as the afternoon wears on. And I think that's very consistent with the patterns we've seen. Whatever the major move is in the morning doesn't necessarily hold through the afternoon. And I certainly think it's healthy to have a little bit of intraday volatility during a very busy earnings season.
Surprising that there was a turnaround so quickly given the economic data that we got.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So what we're clearly seeing is in some of the recent economic data, for example, when we look at the GDP report for the second quarter that came out, it's interesting that we would react to that very much at all. So when I think about how we estimated that, and the estimate was for down 34%, and it came in down 33%, basically, when we think about the fact that we shut the entirety of the U.S. economy, or 80% of the U.S. economy, down for two of the 3 months of that quarter, I'm not sure what we were expecting. I think the important thing is looking at this in a historic fashion. Yes, it's very large, but it's also likely going to get better in the third and fourth quarter. I think more importantly, when we look at economic data, it's the initial jobless claims. How many people actually had to file for the first time for unemployment this week versus last week? And that number went up. And what we had seen for the last 17 weeks was that number was going down. Regardless of that, these numbers are too large, and we really need to get more people back to work, and it's going to take a while before that happens.
And could it linger given, for example, what we get from Dunkin', a bunch of store closures planned, that some of this retail has just been barely hanging on over the last few months, and it really can't do it much longer?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Dunkin' Brands announced that they were going to close about 800 stores. I was shocked to hear what a small part of their footprint that is, and they're really pointing to underperforming stores. So as much as this could be COVID-related, I would actually say that that's them rationalizing their real estate and finding better places to put, you know, optimizing where they have their locations. So, you know, I know for a fact that when I used to drive to work, I drove by at least 53 Dunkin' Donuts. I'm not sure I needed all of those. So I think they're rationalizing some of their opportunity. But it is very true that in consumer discretionary retail, we've got too much square footage right now as a country. We're going to see more of that going down before it starts going back up.
And I'm not saying this necessarily specifically about Dunkin', but what you're talking about there, I wonder if there were maybe more retail outfits doing the exact same thing, going, hey, we were probably needing to close this location and this location. Now's a pretty good time to get that done.
Yeah, Cisco, that is the exact point, right? So you now have the excuse for rationalizing your real estate as a consumer discretionary store with brick and mortar exposure. So I think the other thing that happened is if you were just limping along, you got pushed into bankruptcy a whole lot faster for this pandemic, right? So when you think about companies like Brooks Brothers or Neiman Marcus or, you know, necessarily the other large companies that we've heard about that have gone under the waves in the wake of this pandemic, these are companies that might have gotten there anyway, but they got there a whole lot faster. So what we're seeing is a rationalization of the number of square feet we have dedicated to retail in this country, and I think that's going to continue to be a trend where that gets smaller as the shopping trends have moved more online.
Getting ready to get some reports from big tech on their earnings. What do you expect there?
Well, I can tell you this. Of all of the sectors, technology is probably at the highest hurdle to cross in earnings season for two reasons. A lot of the technology companies did well agnostic of the slowdown in the economy, and I think that's okay. But also the valuations for a lot of these technology companies have been crazy, right? So, you know, some of the names that are reporting tonight are up 50 to 70% on a year-to-date basis. So both on a valuation basis and on an expectation basis, there's a high bar to cross. Whereas some of the cyclical companies like the industrials, the energies, the financials, et cetera, have a much lower bar to cross. So I think this is going to be earnings season where it's easier for the unloved than for the overloved to perform well. And tonight's going to be a great example of that. There's not one of these mega cap companies that hasn't had a terrific year to date performance thus far. Therefore, a lot of great expectations are baked into them. And it's much easier to consider them disappointing somehow, whether it's in guidance or taking special charge or how much money they've spent as the case with Amazon the last time they reported just how much they're spending to keep their folks safe. So I think that there's going to be a better chance of them disappointing in some function and having too much good news baked in.
Thanks so much, Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities in New York. Just ahead, more on big tech, how they fared during testimony before Congress this week. A lot of executives testifying.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. The CEOs of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google parent Alphabet testified before Congress this week. It was via teleconference. Let's get the highlights from Dan Gallagher, the tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column. He's based in San Francisco. Dan, let's begin with just that, some of the highlights of this testimony.
Well, it was like it was more than 5 hours of, what I think it could be fairly called intense grilling. And, you know, we've seen occasions where some of these CEOs have been hauled before Congress before. I do think this was a first for Jeff Bezos of Amazon. But I think this one was different just in both of the kind of scope and scale and length. But also, I think there was more substance in this one. You know, there's always a fair amount of political theater in these types of events. But I think there was more lawmakers kind of focusing in on what I think are pretty substantive issues about, you know, potentially anti-competitive behavior and the reach these companies have.
And that idea of dominance, it seems like that's one that Congress really wants to probe into.
It certainly is. I mean, and that really is the key question with these companies. They're by market value the largest among the largest companies in the world, dominating the S&P 500 there. And, you know, as we're going to see today, we're going to see, you know, all of them are going to report their earnings for the June quarter, which are going to show various ways in which even they've come under pressure from the pandemic. But it's also going to show just how incredibly strong they remain financially at a time when so many businesses are suffering a great deal.
Anything about privacy at all? I know there's been a worry about that with all the big tech.
That did come up many times in the questioning about, especially in companies like Google and Facebook, where people, do a lot of internet searching or share a lot of personal information. The problem with that area is it's a very legitimate area of questioning, but it's not terribly germane to the question about anti-competitive behavior, because privacy is a concern also for smaller companies like Twitter that don't dominate their market. And I think what's potentially an issue for the companies after yesterday's hearings is the potential for regulation that would affect like their business behavior and how things like can they go acquire companies and buy companies or how they interact with third parties. That's the potential area where things could get interesting.
And you touched on the political theater. I mean, of course, that's always a part of it. Is there a sense, though, that you have kind of bipartisan skepticism about the size and reach of some of these companies?
I definitely think there's bipartisan, you know, worry about their scale for sure. There's not a lot of bipartisan agreement, I think, about what to do about it. But that's the one thing that still makes regulation seem like it might be a ways away, because this is a sharply divided Congress and there doesn't seem to be a lot of agreement on, you know, what the problem is and how to address it. But I would say after yesterday's hearing, you know, having watched these things over the last few years, I think there is at least a little bit greater potential now than there used to be.
Amazon, it seems like even more than these other companies, is really dependent on acquiring other businesses and dominating other areas of the economy in order to continue to grow. Are they perhaps at most risk if Congress, in a bipartisan way, decides they want to crack down?
I think they all face some risk, just depending on what areas, you know, Congress wants to look in on. If Congress started to crack down on things like, I think potentially more damaging for Amazon would be how it might regulate how it behaves with its third-party merchants, which is a huge part of its business and one that didn't really come from, you know, M&A or acquisitions. And that could also be an issue for Apple with its App Store and the fees it charges. M&A certainly has an effect, and I think we're already seeing the effect. Like, you know, Google still hasn't cleared its acquisition of Fitbit, and because people are looking at that, even though that's not going to really kind of raise the company's financial strength anything much at all. But that's definitely, you know, I think all these companies, when they do an M&A deal, really have to take that into account now.
Thanks so much. Really good info. Dan Gallagher, he's a tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column. That's Technology Thursday. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, a Chicago developer buys out its overseas partner on a major project downtown.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Chicago's Magellan Development Group has agreed to buy out its majority Chinese partner in the Vista Tower project on the river. Let's get more from Albie Galoon, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Albie, good to have you back on the show. So kind of give us the nuts and bolts here. What's going on?
Hi, Cisco. Well, Magellan, as you noted, is buying out its partner's 90% stake in the Vista Tower, which is that 101-story tower just between Lakeshore Drive and Michigan Avenue right along the Chicago River. Designed by Jeannie Gang, who's kind of probably one of Chicago's most famous architects. And this comes at an interesting time because this project is almost finished. And they've got a hotel that right now, as far as we can tell, we don't know who's going to run the hotel. We don't know what the hotel's going to be named. And then they also have 400 condos. And only 46% of those condos have been are under contract. So they've still got a ways to go. And obviously, the real estate market's not so great. So this project is opening at not a great time.
Well, does that make it even more interesting that this buyout happened during this time, or maybe not? I don't know.
Well, Wanda had been looking for a buyer for its stake for a long time, going back to 2018 when the market was strong. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure why they decided or why they came to an agreement now. I called Magellan and they're not commenting on it. They're restricted by a confidentiality agreement. So we don't really know much about what's going on there. So we'll have to, you know, maybe some information will trickle out sometime in the next few months.
Yeah. As you've been watching things over the last several months, talk a little bit about downtown development in general. I mean, you still have this wonderful, vibrant downtown, but in the midst of the pandemic, there's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, there certainly is. And when you look at the downtown real estate market, you know, you can generally say that things aren't so great. Obviously the economy is in a pretty severe recession. So that's not good for any kind of real estate. And right now, you know, there are questions about development because it's very hard to get construction financing at a time like this. You know, nobody can really predict the future very well. And when there's so much uncertainty in the market, equity partners don't want to invest in projects and lenders don't want to provide construction loans for projects. So we've seen actually a pretty major drop off in construction activity this year. And until we get some more clarity on where the market's headed, I think it's going to continue to be kind of slow on the construction side. But of course, you know, you've got projects that started a year, year and a half, 2 years ago that are still being built. And, you know, you don't stop a construction project just because you're in a recession. Once you started it, you got to finish it.
Thanks so much, Albie Galoon. He's a senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.